Welcome back. You're listening to The Voice of Russia. I'm Scott Craig. Now, good things come to those who wait, so the old saying goes at least. And Russia certainly has waited, for 18 years to be precise. On Friday, it was announced that the World Trade Organization, or WTO, had finally agreed to admit Russia, making it the largest economy left to be brought into this global trade body. The agreement is expected to significantly boost trade between Russia and the rest of the world, to the tune of tens of billions of dollars per year, according to some estimates. But critics say this comes at a price, with inefficient Russian businesses, even entire industries, potentially being put out of action. But will the short-term pain bring a long-term gain for the Russian economy and for its people? And will it help to make the country a safer bet for foreign investors? Well, to discuss this, I'm joined in the studio here in London by John Cook. He's chairman of the Liberalisation of Trade and Services Committee for the City UK, and by Stephen Diel, executive director of the Russo-British Chamber of Commerce, and from St. Petersburg by Sergei Sutirin, head of the World Economy Department at St. Petersburg State University and a WTO chairholder. Gentlemen, welcome to each of you. Sergei Sutirin, let me begin with you and just ask you simply, do you think this is a good deal for Russia?
Yes, generally I think it's a good deal and a good thing for Russia due to various reasons. First of all, in the longer run and from the point of view of the country, WTO accession provides Russia with an opportunity to participate directly in setting of agenda and decision-making with respect to international trading rules and some other components or rules with respect to some other components of international cooperation directly linked with trade, like investments and partly labor migration. So that is extremely significant from my point of view. The next thing which I would like to emphasize relates to the fact that for Russian consumers, liberalization of trade should bring better access to a larger variety of products, better quality, lower prices, and all things that are so significant for the customers, for the ordinary people. Also, that would provide Russian companies with an opportunity to compete on a fair basis with international competitors, both inside Russia and outside of the country. Yet another thing which also should be put on the list in this context is an opportunity to apply to a WTO dispute settlement mechanism, which according to the bulk of the experts is extremely substantial stronghold of the WTO. So these are probably the main basic positive things which I would name right now.
Sergei, we'll come on to some of those in a bit more detail a bit later.
Absolutely.
But really, a lot of the benefits that you're describing there are benefits that really might take place in the long run. But do you think there's a short-term pain to be paid?
Well, with respect to short-term costs or pain, as you put it, I would say that, of course, there is no free lunch, as we all know. But at the same time, WTO system, basically speaking, provides the participants with substantial number of instruments to protect themselves against excessive losses. And also talking about Russian accession, I would say that liberalization in most cases will take place within a reasonable limit of time, what is in the language of the WTO is called implementation period. So just after the accession, and that should be technically completed by mid-summer 2012, only one-third of all tariff lines would be liberal lines in line with level of final binding. In other words, the upper ceiling would be introduced. Another quarter of tariff lines would be liberalized within the three-year period. And the longest implementation period, which equals to 8 years, is for pork and also with respect to some very sensitive goods like cars or helicopters and civil aircrafts, implementation period would be 7 years. So this is a relatively long period of time, which should allow Russian companies to, you know, to adjust themselves, to prepare themselves for these new rules of the game, if you wish.
Let me come to Stephen DL there on that point.
Yes, sure.
Some of the practicalities mentioned there, we'll talk about it in a bit more detail. But Stephen DL, if I could just ask you, first of all, why, in your view, did it take so long to get a deal like this in the first place? 18 years.
I think there's two reasons for that. One is thanks to Russia itself. Russia, throughout this period, this 18 years, has dilly-dallied, has blown hot and cold. There's been times when you thought, yes, it's all going ahead, and they've announced, yes, it's going to happen this year, and then the year end has come and it hasn't happened. And so I think that they have been more enthusiastic at times and less enthusiastic at times. So it's partly their fault. It's partly, of course, other countries, and most recently, what springs to mind is Georgia. I mean, this was a way for a little country, Georgia, which had a little spat with Russia in 2008, and it was a way for them to stick a spoke in the wheel and say, well, okay, you know, we don't like what happened in 2008. Look what we can do because of the WTO entry regulations. You know, Georgia could actually stop it from happening. So, you know, I think that there's not one simple answer. It's been from both sides that's why it's dragged on for quite so long.
And do you think it's something which is going to boost trade levels along anywhere near the lines that we've been hearing?
Ultimately, yes. But I think that we can take this long lead-in period. It seems to me it's rather like a non-urgent operation on the National Health Service. Sometimes you have to wait in a queue for a very long time. It eventually comes along. You know that the operation, let's say a hip replacement or something, is not going to be very pleasant, and there's going to be a rather painful period afterwards. And yet, within a matter of months or a couple of years, you know, you're going to be up and playing tennis again. I think that initially, a lot of Russians are going to be more worried than they need to be by it. I mean, some Russians have cause to be worried, because if they're not working properly and if they think they've got an easy market for their goods now, suddenly they're going to find, you know, you've got to work harder, you've got to produce better goods.
John Cook, if I can come to you, how confident are you that Russia's WTO accession is going to make it a more transparent, if I can say, place in which to do business?
Well, I think, as Stephen has already said, this is something probably for the long run. I just want to add a point that was to what Stephen said earlier. I think another reason for the negotiations to have taken some time is that the WTO has itself changed over the period. 18 years ago, the WTO was really only concerned with trade in goods. But after the Uruguay round, which concluded in 1993, it became concerned with and from there onwards, it became concerned with services as well. And I think this was this therefore meant that the negotiation process had to be adapted. I make that point because services, and particularly financial services, is of course what I'm concerned with. And I think there are all kinds of undertakings given in the Russian accession commitments to greater clarity on regulation, greater transparency. Those things will, of course, take time, just as they, in fact, take time with every acceding country to the WTO. I don't think this is at all unusual.
Sergei Satirin, do you think that WTO membership is something which is going to finally help Russia tackle probably the most endemic problem it has in terms of doing business, and that's the rampant corruption that cuts across really every level of society? Do you think this is going to help tackle that?
Yes, I believe it should help due to basically several reasons. First of all, the whole system of WTO, and this is, you know, general feature of the system, is WTO rules. They're supposed to be as transparent as possible and as predictable as possible. And that would bring Russia much closer to the situation of rule of law, which nowadays, frankly, is not in place in many cases. And also, in addition to that, I would say that just a whole set of commitments made by Russia during negotiations, and as a result of negotiations, they should make it much more difficult for state officials to protect industries, say nothing about individual companies, against the rules which are stipulated by various agreements of the WTO. So from, you know, both sides in a way, from the side of business, from the side of authorities, the incentives and opportunities to introduce some kind of corruption schemes and similar type of things, they should be reduced.
Do you think there's a political will to tackle corruption? I mean, we've heard a lot of talk actually in the past from Putin, from President Medvedev and others. We hear talk of tackling corruption in Russia, but I think we could probably all agree that you don't see anywhere near as much action on the ground. Do you think that actually that's going to change now?
I hope so. Of course, I can't be sure, but I do hope. And again, from that point of view, international commitments, due to superiority of international rules with respect to domestic, according to overall perception of how it should be organized, also might help. And from that perspective, commitments made by Russia, they might be yet another, you know, element of pressure on Russian authorities to tackle corruption.
Stephen Diel, can I just ask, what do you think the overall impact of this will be on international investor confidence in Russia?
It's difficult to put it in simple terms, simply because of what's going on in Russia at the moment. It's rather unfortunate. I mean, okay, it's a fact, it's happening now, but it's rather unfortunate that this didn't happen earlier, in so much as post-parliamentary elections, pre-presidential elections, as we know, you know, Russia's had some demonstrations. There's a rather uncertain political climate in Russia at the moment going into 2012. So this is something else thrown into the mix. So it's difficult to say whether this one thing will have too much effect. So it's another very interesting element, though, for the observer and for those of us who are involved day to day in Russian business, to say, well, look, you know, this is a step forward. No matter how uncertain the political situation might be, I think the investor community as a whole will say, yeah, this is good. You know, this should have happened a long time ago. Finally, it is happening. So from that point of view, it's good. But I think it's, in a sense, it's come at a not such a good time. But I think certainly those who are already investing in Russia, and obviously in the Chamber of Commerce, we deal with quite a few of those, they will be probably relieved as much as anything that it's finally happening. Those who are thinking about it, and we've had a lot of inquiries this year of companies interested in doing business in Russia, haven't done as yet, also individuals who are looking to invest, they may say, well, okay, this is a step forward, but let's still hang back and see what's going to happen in the next few months, and particularly what happens in the presidential elections come March.
And interestingly, perhaps this agreement isn't scheduled to be ratified in the Russian parliament until after that the presidential election takes place. Do you think we should read any significance into that?
I don't think anyone's going to be surprised by that. I mean, I think it would be very strange in any case if it were seen as being rushed through now. It's taken 18 years to get to this point. I don't think anyone would expect it to be ratified, say, within a month. So elections aside, I think it would take a while anyway. But I think we, you know, sensible investors will actually think, well, okay, that's just a reasonable period. And it makes, to be honest, it makes sense too.
John Cook, I know that you've been involved in helping Russia create an international financial center. Do you think that this, now that what Pascal Lamy, the head of the WTO, called the WTO seal of approval, now that Moscow has been given that, do you think that that's going to make your job easier?
I certainly hope that it will. I think it's one of the things we're looking at very much in this joint project with the city of Moscow to make Moscow an international financial center is the regulatory building blocks that need to be put in place for that to happen. Some of them are, of course, quite specific for trade in particular kind of financial products to be done at all. But others are much more general concerning the overall layout of predictability and the rule of law, as Professor Sotirin has said already. And I think that Russia's joining the WTO will be an important signal in that respect. It's also, in particular, a signal of Russia taking on some very definite commitments to regulatory transparency, predictability, and appealability of administrative decisions in terms of the General Agreement on Trade in Services. Those are the standards that Russia has subscribed to. But on the other hand, none of these international commitments of this kind don't work by themselves. They have to be backed by political will and the detailed administrative and regulatory work to create an environment in which business of new kinds can actually happen. And we have seen that, for instance, I suppose the great analogy is Chinese accession to the WTO, which has been used by the Chinese authorities as a general instrument, a vehicle for promoting domestic change in a whole number of areas. And it's led, of course, in the case of China, to an export-led economy, which may now be changing again, but it was definitely part of a coherent strategy, and that's what needs to happen in Russia for real success to be realised, I think.
Stephen DL, you wanted to come in here.
Yes, there's two points that John said there I'd just like to pick up. One, this idea of a signal, I think, is very important, particularly if we think back just a couple of years to when the time when they formed the customs union, or they announced they were going to form the customs union with Russia, Belarus and Kazakhstan, and then actually proposed that that grouping should become part of the WTO. And that was seen as a way of fobbing off the WTO and telling, basically saying, we don't want to join. So I think that it's very positive now. We've come to this point where it is actually going to happen. But also, John's very valid point about China and the export-led market. I really hope that this is going to mean that Russian producers of whatever sort of goods actually get their goods onto Western markets. If you go into the average UK high street, I would defy you to find more than two Russian products. One is Russian standard vodka, the other is Kaspersky Lab software. Now, for a country the size of Russia, that is absurd. They ought to be producing quality goods. They are producing quality goods, but they ought to be exporting them. They ought to be involved more in the world economy. So if it does actually bring more Russian goods onto our shelves, I only welcome that.
Sergei Sotirin, we've heard some response from Russian business leaders. The president of the Russian Chamber of Commerce was quoted as saying that he's concerned about the impact that this agreement could have in certain specific industries, car making, aviation, for example. Do you think he's right to worry about those specific industries?
Yes, of course. Car manufacturing and production of civil aircrafts, of course, they, due to various reasons, they are very sensitive industries for Russia. And I do support some concerns with respect to their destiny. But as I already said, the implementation period is relatively long. And the companies in the sector of national economy, they basically have opportunity to adjust themselves. It's up to them whether they will respond properly or not. But possibilities and opportunities for adjustment, they are basically available.
Just a quick reminder to our listeners that you are listening to The Voice of Russia from London with me, Scott Craig. And today we're discussing Russia's membership of the WTO with my guests, John Cook, Stephen DL and Sergei Sotirin. Sergei Sotirin, let me just put a
brief point to you as well. We talked a bit about the politics of this earlier. I mean, obviously, we've had Russia's recent parliamentary elections, which were allegations of fraud and vote rigging, etc. We saw the demonstrations in the aftermath of those elections. If there is a short-term economic pain to WTO membership, in your view, does that increase the political uncertainty in the country?
Well, first of all, I do hope that short-term economic pain would be really minimal. And at the same time, I do not think that although accession to the WTO is extremely significant, it might be described as the only factor which either negatively or positively might influence performance of national economy. We have a lot of other, you know, factors, reasons, whatever, like fluctuations of exchange rate. Talking about liberalization of whatever markets, we shouldn't forget that average reduction in tariffs is relatively low, like 3 percentage points. And if we look at the fluctuations of exchange rate, which also has a direct impact on relative competitiveness of domestic products, domestic companies vis-a-vis foreign competitors. That is something which quite often might be basically of minor significance.
John Cook, simply put, do you think trade liberalization in Russia today is something that actually can be successful?
Yes, I do. But as has already been said, it will take time. But I think a point to be made is that there is plenty of time. These accession commitments are staged over quite a long period. I mean, you know, insurance companies can only from say the European Union can only establish new branches in Russia 9 years after accession. And Professor Satirin has already pointed out to at least three stages in the adaptation of tariffs. So I think these are actually quite long periods. And one of the points that was being made last week when I was in Geneva for the WTO ministerial is that in fact amongst accession compared with many other recent accession packages of commitments, the Russian ones probably protect domestic industry and service providers for a longer period than many of the much more recent accessions. This is because they have been negotiated over a long period, and many of them were agreed as far back as 2004, when standards were somewhat different from what they are now in the WTO. Of course, for international trade to develop, a lot of features have to be in place. Russia at the moment has its highest global ranking in trade on exports of goods, and I think a great part of that is probably exports of raw materials. It has a lower ranking in terms of imports. And it has its lowest ranking in terms of exports of services and higher ranking in terms of imports of services. So it can be done, I think.
You're listening to The Voice of Russia.
Stephen Diel, how confident are you and your members that we'll see full implementation of this agreement? And I'm thinking specifically of things like, for example, software piracy and copyright infringement.
Scott, those are two very good examples of areas where our UK members are worried about Russia. We had a case, it's 2 years ago now, but an auto parts manufacturer who came to deal with a Russian manufacturer, gave them their product, agreed on a certain amount to be sold, and then found that the auto manufacturer had made four times as many and was selling the rest on the black market, undercutting the price of the original. Now, these things have happened, and I think that this is one of the issues to be addressed by individual companies and indeed by governments. I mean, John made a very good point there as well. It so much is going to depend on the Russian authorities as to how serious they are about implementing it. Now, we have to hope that because they've finally got to this stage, and I mentioned earlier that you know, the question of the customs union a couple of years ago made it look less likely that Russia would come into the WTO. Well, they are now coming in, but a lot will depend on the authorities because, of course, Russia is still very much a top-down country. But I think one reason why I'm optimistic, too, is that many Russian producers have seen huge changes in the last 20 years. We had the collapse of the Soviet Union and rampant inflation and the collapse of a lot of industry and a lot of businesses and then new ones built up. Russians have shown themselves to be very adaptable and showing great initiative and great entrepreneurship. We had the collapse of the ruble in 1998, which actually turned out to be a great kick up the backside for Russian industry because they couldn't buy everything from abroad. They had to make their own things. I am confident that Russian producers can cope with this, and even if it seems a bad deal at first, they will cope. But I think that point that John made about the will of the authorities really mustn't be underestimated too. The Russian authorities have got to embrace the WTO fully.
We are almost out of time, but Sergei Sotirin, let me just come back to you finally. We've been talking about the ratification of this deal. Of course, it doesn't just rely on the Russian side, though. I'm thinking also about the Jackson-Vanik legislation from the US, which is going to have to be repealed, is it not, for this agreement to be fully implemented. And, of course, there's an election coming up in the US as well. Do you think that we'll be seeing this legislation being repealed from the US Congress?
Well, I hope so. At least President Obama, he said in one of his latest interviews that trying to get rid of this really obsolete type of amendment should be on top of agenda for American authorities. And at the same time, well, it's kind of, all in all, kind of a major obstacle, or minor obstacle with respect to how the system should operate. And I do not think that regardless of whatever Americans might do, that might seriously hurdle the ratification of documents by Russian Parliament.
Okay, there we must leave it, gentlemen. But my thanks today to my guests, John Cook, Stephen Diel, and Sergei Sotirin. No doubt it's an issue we'll be coming back to as we see how WTO membership affects Russia's economy and its people in the months and years ahead. But from me and the rest of the team here in London, thank you. Goodbye.